This is BI Radio.
Hi, I'm Kelsey Howarth. In this next segment, you're going to listen in to my interview with Stephen Dubner, the co-author with Stephen D. Levitt of Freakonomics, A Rogue Economist Explores the Hidden Side of Everything. Dubner is also a former editor and writer for the New York Times Magazine and has written for The New Yorker, Time, and The Washington Post. Currently a regular contributor to ABC News, Dubner appears monthly on Good Morning America and in a segment of World News Tonight called Freakonomics Friday. Here we discuss incentives, the danger of consensus decisions, and where we should look for signs of economic recovery. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Freakonomics has been a huge bestseller. But for those people who aren't aware of Freakonomics, can you give us an overview of the book?
It's a book that is a little bit about economics, but mostly not. It's a collaboration between myself, a writer, and an economist, Steve Levitt, at the University of Chicago, based on a lot of research that Levitt and some others like him have done. And they try to use the tools of economics to explain human behavior in a way that is probably foreign and hopefully a little bit more interesting than what most people think of when they think of economics. It's very hard to try to talk about the economy per se, the macroeconomy. So we do something much simpler, probably much less valuable, but hopefully somewhat worthwhile, which is use data and use analysis the way that macroeconomists do. When we talk about economics, we're talking about incentives. That is, the things that make people do the things that we want them to do or don't want them to do, and how often even the best laid incentives backfire. Almost every action has strange unintended consequences. And that while it's hard to predict these things, we try to at least describe the way they've happened in the past so that people can have a little bit better grip.
Mm-hmm. In terms of incentives, I want to talk about the carrots and the sticks. You've mentioned you can't change behavior. Is that why some incentives go astray?
Well, I wouldn't say you can't change behavior. It's just that behavior change is always harder than you think. It doesn't mean that incentives don't work, but, you know, I think that it needs experimentation, really. This is really an argument for experimenting, which is something that firms, companies, corporations don't do enough of. You really don't know what works until you know what works. And experimenting with different kinds of incentives, different kinds of whether carrots or sticks, positive or negative, sometimes you want to reward, sometimes you want to punish. Not all incentives work the same for the same people. If you experiment, which is generally pretty cheap and easy, you can find what will work best. The problem is that most corporations, I find, are set up in kind of consensus mode, which is to say, you know, we like to be congenial, we like to arrive at consensus, but if you think about allocation of resources, if you think about corporations the way an economist would for a minute, you think, well, this is a little bit odd. You know, we're going to take 20 really smart people, put them in a room for an hour. That's 20 man hours you're spending right there. And then we're going to come up collectively with one idea that we think is the best idea, the consensus idea. And then devote all our resources to making that idea a reality. What if it's the wrong idea? Okay? What if instead you took those 20 people and told them, as for instance Google does, Google has something called 20% time. If you're an engineer, 20% of your work time should be devoted to your personal pet project, 1 out of 5 days. So what happens if instead of taking 20 people, putting them in a room for an hour, take those 20 people, say, go take an hour, come up with an idea, and work on it for a while. So probably 15 of the ideas will be terrible, 5 will be pretty good, 3 will be really good, 2 will be really good, 1 will be awesome. But if you take the time to develop that and devote some really small resources into it instead of the one big collectively arrived at consensus decision, in the end you're always going to do better, always going to do better. And there are corporations that do this more and more, but unfortunately there are way too many that don't do that. So especially when you're concerned about what other people think of you, when there's any kind of politics at play, whether governmental politics or office politics, whatever, you know, people are unwilling often. People are often even unwilling to raise a question or make a suggestion that they think might not be entertained seriously, that they think might be considered irrelevant or irreverent somehow. Mm-hmm. And therefore they tamp it down. So instead you get the most kind of mainstream, you know, dead horse beaten ideas possible. And they often don't work, whereas a little bit of experimentation could probably help a lot.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talk about the economy, about the stimulus funding. Are you feeling that we are turning the corner in terms of the economy?
Well, there are still debates, huge debates within the academic community of macroeconomists about whether the Depression was made better or worse by intervention. Okay? So this is 80 years later. The fact is that people expect too much or something out of economists that they shouldn't. And economists are not guiltless either. Economists like to make predictions. You know, we're going to see, here's what we're going to see this quarter. In my view, that's manpower that could be much better spent in other ways. Predicting the future in any realm is really hard. Talk about incentives. I feel like people are not penalized nearly enough for bad predictions. It's almost free to make a prediction about anything you want. You find, however, that when people do have skin in the game, that their predictions in general tend to be much, much better. So, for instance, you will always do better by looking at prediction markets, which reflect better information and people who are putting money at stake, than by looking at polls or especially pundits. There's just very, very little incentive to not make predictions because it's fun. You get to say what you want. People, you know, say, "Oh, that was so bold," but they're not. They're typically not held accountable. When economists make bad predictions, they're sometimes held accountable. But in the case of this current recession, very, very, very few economists were able to describe the situation we're now in, even 8 or 10 months ago. So when you ask me to predict the future, I would say, don't listen to me. Don't listen to anybody. Look for signs that seem significant. Learn the difference between leading indicators and lagging indicators. The stock market is a leading indicator, typically, scientifically. Unemployment is a lagging indicator, typically, scientifically. There's an easy reason. It takes a lot less time. The stock market processes information really fast. If I think something good is happening, I can buy right now. If I think something bad is happening with employment, if I'm firing people, I'm slow to do it because it's a painful, difficult process. And if I'm hiring people, I'm slow to do it because it's an expensive, time-consuming process. So that's why one, for instance, is a laggard and one is a leader. So when you're reading your morning paper and you see the market is up, but unemployment is also up, and therefore it's a toss-up, I don't know which way to think. Well, that's not right. You do know which way to think. Those are both indicators that the economy would seem to be getting better. But I'm not a betting man, so I wouldn't bet on it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For more information from Stephen Dubner and Stephen Levitt, visit their website at freakonomics.com, which has been called the most readable economics blog in the universe. For more information on how to get Dubner at your next event, please visit the Harry Walker Agency at harrywalker.com.
Feeling the heat? Go from the hot seat to the driver's seat with IBM Cognos 8v4, the latest release of the IBM Cognos Performance Management Platform. Inform, engage, and align your business users with new dynamic dashboards, dimension management, and many other innovations. Get into the driver's seat today. Visit cognos.com/driver's seat. That's cognos.com/driver's seat.
Interviews, insights, and opinions on performance management. You're listening to BI Radio.